to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, December 23rd, 2013, almost 2014. We're pretty close. And you're listening to episode 82 right now. My name's Rob, and I'm hanging out with Jason.
Hello.
Hello, how you doing?
Excellent.
Good, as you clear your throat loudly into the microphone. Thanks so much for that.
The listeners come to expect that.
I'm going to have to edit that out now. I probably won't.
Honestly. Well, now you won't, because we talked about
it. Well, right, yeah, how's it going, man?
It's going pretty well.
Good.
It's almost Christmas.
It is almost Christmas.
It's crazy.
Right?
And then, like you said, the end of the year, just bam, right there.
And right there it is. We have some business to take care of, though, before we get to the end of the year.
Business.
Yeah, we had some promises that we made to our listeners, and...
So many.
Oh, my goodness, we've made some promises. But we have one in particular that I'm thinking about tonight.
We're going to follow through on?
Yeah, finally. Yeah! that was our fabulous, exciting cardboard arcade contest, where we asked everybody to submit a game idea, just a quick little pitch to us, email it to us, about a game using the cardboard arcade format from our good friend Chevy Dodd. And we had several listeners who sent in some really fun and unique and interesting ideas. And we have Chevy back with us here today to help announce the winner. Hi.
How's it going, guys?
Fantastic. We're glad to have you back.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. So we had a lot of good entries, and some people entered several times, and we love that. I mean, the more ideas, the better, and that's always exciting. Quite the range of submissions inspired by classic NES games, and a couple inspired by some Super Nintendo and even PlayStation games. Even,
yeah.
Which was kind of funny to see that come in.
And we had a nice, healthy debate, too, on the winner. Yeah. It was good. It was good times.
Yes.
Yeah, well, it wasn't an easy pick, that's for sure.
Not even a little bit.
No, certainly not. Chevy, why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about, why don't you tease us for us here, what the winner is? If you can kind of set it up for us. Yeah, set it up for us. Set us up for us. I'm having trouble with words tonight. Jason.
Yeah, you are.
Why don't you, I don't know, actually, I don't even know what you're trying to say. I think what you're trying to say is Chevy.
I think he just wants me to tease it in and not just go for it. So yeah. I picked a game that I thought captured the video game feeling of a dexterity game, but with strategy, that had a little bit of that high energy. Oh my gosh, what am I going to do next? Because stuff's coming at me faster than I can deal with it. And when I first did Paper Route, that's what I was going for that feeling of oh my god. When it was over, I wanted you to have that intense feeling. I picked a game that I felt brought that video game feeling in, but also brought a really interesting aspect that I hadn't seen yet, which was introducing a board mechanic, and it kind of tied in one of my favorite methods of play, which is kind of like programmatic play. So we settled on the winner from Drew Pritchard is the game called BoomBots.
Yes.
Drew says this game was inspired by a little bit of one of his NES favorites, Bomberman. But in his game, we each control a boombot moving around an 8x8 grid, basically a chessboard, and we're going to drop bombs and try and blow people up. So, his concept was start of the game, we put some stuff on the board, we each have our own deck of cards, and then we have a little program tableau where we're going to try and put cards as fast as we can on this this tableau so we can move our bots around. So very similar to the way Paper Route works, you're going to rip a card off the top of your deck and you're going to have to immediately choose, do I want this or do I chuck it? And you're going to try and set up your five cards and then go. And then you got to go through the steps one by one, which I've done recently with Tuesday Night Tanks, and I love playing Robo Rally, so it's a pretty familiar mechanic. And after everybody resolves their thing, we blow up bombs and see if anybody gets killed. So, it sounds like actually a pretty workable idea right out of the gate.
It does.
It was a very complete idea, which some of the ideas we got were a little less complete, but this one felt really polished to me. I kind of like it. Kind of interested to maybe think about it a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exciting. I think it's a great idea too. My friends and I, when we were kids, used to play the crap out of Bomberman, hours and hours at a time. And we'd have eight people in the room and we'd just be trading controllers around, having tournaments. Man, Bomberman is an experience, a video game experience that is still unmatched, I think. And
it leaves you sweating, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this
it's
idea.
Intense.
Yeah, and this Boombots idea really, I think it could capture a lot of that same kind of excitement and that energy, like you said. And I think it's a fantastic winner.
Yep.
So yes, congratulations, yep. Mr. Pritchard.
Yes, sir. And Chevy, I think already has your copy of Paper Route ready to go. So we'll get
I actually do.
Yeah, great. So we'll get your contact information and get that over to Chevy, and we'll have that out to you soon.
And because we like to make people actually listen to the show mm-hmm. to win, we're not going to send you a message right away. So when you hear this, send us a message. But in a couple weeks, if you haven't heard from me, we'll probably send you a message. So we do know that sometimes people listen to podcasts not regularly on schedule, especially with the holidays. So
yeah.
No worries. We will not accidentally give your prize away to someone else.
Yeah, don't worry.
At least I hope not. It's on Chevy, so I really hope
not. No, I won't. I'm not mailing it to anybody else.
Okay, good. You don't have to be present to win, sir.
It's reserved. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We'll find you.
Cool. A couple other honorable mentions I think maybe we give a quick shout-out to. One of my other favorites was a game inspired by Punch-Out, Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, which I thought was kind of fun and simple and had an exciting idea to kind of mimic the feel of the original NES game. And Jason, you had a favorite too.
Yeah, I think one of my favorites was Duck Hunt. And that was just because it was actually a really simple idea, not a lot of details with it. But it was because it was just a simple idea that was different, which was that you were kind of placing cards, like those arrow cards, to try and make a path to shoot the duck, which I thought was kind of a cool idea.
Yeah, it
just
fun.
Was different.
Yeah, unique.
So
yeah.
So those are some honorable mentions. So thank you everyone
yes.
who submitted their awesome ideas.
Thank you very, very much. We really appreciate all that stuff. And Chevy, thank you again for joining us on this contest. We appreciate it, man.
Yeah, it was awesome. Thanks, guys.
And don't forget, everybody, if you like listening to Chevy, which I know you do, that every other week you can listen to us on Something from Nothing, our live video show that we do on Google Hangouts.
Mm-hmm.
So make sure to check that out.
But every other Sunday.
Yep. And Chevy is one of the main panelists, along with myself, Rob, and TC Petty. So strongly encourage you to check that out.
It's a good time. We always have some great guests and a lot of fun.
We'll actually be back this upcoming Sunday, right?
Yep. This show will post on the 23rd, and in this upcoming Sunday, it'll be the next one at 8 p.m. Eastern.
That's right.
Yep.
I'm sure TC will have some awesome guests lined up. He always does.
Yep. Cool. Well, thanks again, Chevy. It's been good talking to you.
Yep. Thanks for having me.
Yep. Thanks, man.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, speaking of Something from Nothing, that reminds me, the other night, I wasn't able to join you guys on the show, but I managed to catch the second half of it, and you guys were talking about legacy games, right?
We were.
Yeah, and I thought that would be good for us to talk about here for our feature of the week, about legacy games, the concept. This is kind of a new genre of gaming.
It is. I mean, there's not a lot out there. I mean, the big one is, of course, Risk Legacy.
Yeah.
And we were fortunate on Something from Nothing, as you saw, and hopefully if you guys watch it, you saw Rob Davio was on, and Rob is the foremost expert on legacy games, because as he tells you, he's designed 1.5 of them. The first being Risk Legacy, the second being half of a game called Seafall that he's still working on, which is his new game that he's releasing under his own company, named not under Hasbro, and that will be also be a legacy game. So to kind of define what legacy
games are. Yeah, we need to make sure we do that, yeah.
A legacy game is a board game that's kind of got a set duration, say 15 plays. In those 15 plays, like after you're going to get with the same group of friends, you're going to play once, and then you're going to open envelopes, and they're going to tell you to do things, and you're going to permanently change the game as you play. In Risk Legacy, it goes from being basically Risk, and in fact, I've even heard that the first couple of games are a simpler version of Risk, to where it just keeps getting more and more compounded, to where if that last play, if you were to just approach someone with that game, they would be like, this is way too complicated, I can't play that game.
Hmm.
But by the time they hit play 15, you're locked on, you know? So the idea is the game kind of has a shelf life. You're only going to get 15 plays out of it.
Yeah.
But theoretically, you're going to pay $60 for it. You're probably going to buy in with it with a few friends, even possibly.
Mm-hmm.
And you're all going to share that big experience. And in the end, you're going to hopefully be better for it and have had a great time. Everyone we've talked to has had extremely positive things to say about the game.
Yeah, and everybody I've ever spoken to who has played it has had just glowing things to say. They just go bonkers for it. And you and I haven't had the chance to play it because we haven't been able to, we don't have a group to play it with where we know for sure we can have this set, these same six people together for 15 games.
Right.
We can't guarantee that commitment. And so it's not really, it's not something we're really going to be able to experience, I think.
Which is too bad.
It is.
It sounds awesome.
Yeah. And it is, and it, of course, regular Risk, it's 2 to 6 players. This one, they say you really should play it with a full complement of 6, right?
Right. I've heard that 4 is not so bad, but that 4 to 6 you really need.
Yeah. Because Risk with 2 players is kind of a bummer, no matter what. But,
right.
I mean, it's not bad, but it's just, it takes so much of the fun out of it.
It's very back and forth.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, another just cool things about this whole Legacy-style game is you'll get an option where it'll say you can do this or you can do that. And based on what you choose, you might be told to just tear some cards up. Mm-hmm. Tear these cards up. You're never going to use these again. Or cross this out on the board.
Right. You're drawing the board, putting stickers on it, all kinds of crazy stuff.
What a crazy idea.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
And which, actually, what's funny is when we're talking about it on Something from Nothing, Rob pointed out, the other Rob, pointed out something that I was thinking, which was, you know, it sounds so foreign to people, but it's basically an RPG game.
Yeah.
I mean, that's basically the same idea. And I thought... Sure. You know, that was one of the first things that popped into my head, having played a lot of RPGs over my life, and that it reminded me of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So, exciting things and problematic things with legacy games, okay? The exciting thing is that it's that evolution, the way the game itself will change as you play it. And the more times you play it, the more the experience of playing that game will change. And that's a really neat and exciting concept.
Mm-hmm.
You're not starting from square one every time. Every other board game, every other style of board game, every time you begin that game, you're starting at the same exact beginning spot.
Right.
You know, you're starting the game over again from scratch, and then you get to your win condition, and then the game ends. But with this style of game, with this concept of game, that starting position is different every time you play it.
That's right.
Right.
That's right.
But, of course, that brings with it an end point. You know, with Risk Legacy, it's 15 games, and then you might as well throw it in the trash.
Right.
You know?
I mean, you can keep it to look back at it sometimes and be like, oh, look at this is what we did, you know. And
right, but you can never play it again.
Right. Right. I mean, I guess you could.
Well, I don't know. I mean,
I don't know why you would.
People say you don't play it again after that. You and I, have never played it. But,
right.
Yeah. So, and that's kind of a bummer, but if you put it in perspective, I mean... Most of the board games that I have not played 15 times.
I know, which is a really funny thing to think about.
Mm-hmm.
And when you also think about the idea of that is not only have you not played it 15 times, but you also were probably not nearly as fulfilled as you would have been had you played 15 games of a story that you sure. were making as you went.
Yeah, right. So I've heard people complain about the value of that and how... You know, oh, I'm going to spend all this money on it. I'm not going to get to play it forever. And well, you know, I don't think that's a problem. I think that's a value proposition that's well worth it.
Yep.
The bigger concern for me is that need to play with the same group of people.
Right. That's tough.
It's the only reason why I haven't played this game yet. Why right. I haven't bought this game yet.
I think a good solution to that is, first of all, you need the game to be 3 to 4 players, or maybe even 2 to 4 players.
Mm-hmm.
So that you feel like you can, you know what I mean?
Right.
You could achieve it more. Cause I think for, you know, to have a game group of 4 people that you need, or 3 people to play a game like this, that's going to feel a lot more approachable mm-hmm. than, you know, 4 to 6.
Yeah. Now, I mean, the argument to that, of course, is, well, if I'm playing this game and the story is evolving and the game itself is changing, then it's really going to be best appreciated if you're playing with different people every time. You're the only commonality there between those games, and you're going to be the only one who appreciates those changes in the evolution of the game. If you're playing with a different group every time, it's changing for you, but it's not changing for them, and they're not going to be exposed to that experience. So it makes sense that you would want to play it with the same group of people every time.
Exactly.
But like you said, maybe if you can make that a smaller group.
Yep.
Then that is probably, it's going to be more accessible, I think.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I would like to see that as a 2-player game. Is there any way, I mean, if there's any way that could happen as a 2-player game?
I think in a game where you're working somewhat together, I think you could pull that off, you know, and maybe something to try and do with this, because, I mean, we're not experts on this.
Mm-hmm.
This might be a good time for us to try and do an idea on our own. Like, try and take this.
Brainstorm something.
And just brainstorm up an idea.
Okay, we can do that.
I think I have kind of a... So, a lot of these games focus on war, right?
Yeah.
War or that sort of thing. And so, ever since we talked about that in that last episode, I've just been thinking about, like, what would be a good idea for a legacy game? You know, and Jamie Stegmaier was on, and he talked about how his game Viticulture, which is about wine harvesting, they're doing a legacy version where it's, like, it's called tiered... like a tiered vineyard, and there's like in the box it would have like levels is the idea, you know what I mean? So like those levels could, you know, could be revealed as you played through it, right? So more options would become known as you went.
Okay.
But I think that, you know, the real thing that I like is the idea that it's not a war game. Not that those games aren't cool, but it's been done. So let's try and think of something else. So one of the thoughts that kept popping into my mind was, what if you are on a generation ship? You familiar with that concept? If anybody's not, a generation ship is an idea that it's this huge spaceship. We load thousands of people on it, right? Maybe 50,000 or more.
Oh, yeah, probably more.
Yeah. And it's a huge, huge ship. And it starts off towards a star or a planet. And the people that get on that ship... will never get off that ship alive. They know that. Their kids will probably never get off the ship alive. Their kids' grandkids might. And that's the point, right? The interstellar travels a long ways.
Right. It's going to take 500 years to get to the next star. Even, you know, at sublight speeds, it's going to take 500 years to get to the next door or star. You know, who knows what that number is? But, you know, and we can't, there's no such thing right now as hyperspace or light speed or anything. We don't have that technology. So, so if you're thinking in real scientific terms, then that's the kind of space travel. That's what you would have to do to get mankind to the next star.
Yep.
Yeah, you need this generational ship where the people who get on that ship have kids, and their kids have kids, and their kids have kids, and their kids have kids, and maybe those kids will actually set foot on that next planet.
Right.
Or see that next star.
So what if you're playing as people on the ship, and each session, you're the adults, you're the people in charge, but also in that game, as non-player people, are the kids, right? So you're trying to do specific things, keeping the ship running and stuff. But in the meantime, you're also trying to influence that next generation, right?
Okay.
Because the next play session, you know, at the end of the play session, it actually could be whoever wins that play session gets first choice on the next, you know, who they're going to be in the next round, right?
Okay.
Or maybe you play as a single family. But the idea is, you know what I mean, a single family through generations.
Your actions in this generation will affect the next.
Right. So the next session... you're the next generation. Mm-hmm. And you know there's going to be 15 generations before you get to the star, assuming you don't crash the ship on the way.
Right.
Right.
So, okay. So, with the actions that you're going to take are going to need to affect what happens both in the next game and in the end game. So, there's got to be stuff that you're doing that will affect the quality of life for the next generation. Okay. Things like... education, population, health,
politics,
sure.
So if you have that many people on your ship, right?
Right.
It's not just going to be happy-go-lucky. You're going to have people that are going to cause problems.
Right.
You're going to have issues.
Mm-hmm. And then in terms of for the long-term voyage, you're going to want to make sure that you are cultivating your food, not just for yourself, but making sure you're prepared to plant food or raise livestock or whatever. Mm-hmm. So you need to be maintaining that. You need to make sure that your equipment is in good repair, that it's going to get you there safely, and that it's going to, that the specialty equipment that you're going to need to terraform the new planet is going to be in good shape. You're going to need to make sure.
So there's a lot of factors that could go into things you need to manage. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of what that would look like as a game, like what you would do.
It seems like the core game board would probably have to be some kind of a diagram or schematic of the ship itself. And the first thing that pops into my head anyway is a diagram of the ship with different stations on it, okay? You know, science lab, laboratories, you've got say storage, You've got agriculture. You've got livestock. You've got education. You know, you've got medical facilities. This kind of thing. You know, different stations, different parts of the ship where things are maintained. You know, living quarters, recreational areas, whatever. That's the first thing that pops into my head.
That makes total sense for what the board should look like. Right. Absolutely.
So now translating that into gameplay.
Well, I think that the first thing that's going to happen is at the beginning of every game, you're going to open an envelope. The envelope's going to say what you're presented with.
Okay.
Sometimes maybe it's a short term, like we are being attacked by aliens. I'm not saying it's that, but something like there is an immediate issue right now that we have to fix. Right.
Sure.
And based on how you respond to that, certain things happen. I mean, maybe give really hard choices, right? Mm-hmm. Like have a spot where it's like one of these two parts of the ship is going to get destroyed because these things are happening. How are you going to allocate your resources and determine what to save and what not to save? Mm-hmm. And knowing that in the end of the day, right?
Yeah.
Like you're never going to have that again for hundreds of years.
Mm-hmm. So the first session is launch. You know, you're leaving the Earth's orbit, or maybe it's at the Lagrange point between the Earth and the Moon. Probably, you know,
that probably makes more sense just because they'd never build that on the Earth,
right? Yeah, so it would have to have been constructed in orbit in a gravity neutral place. Okay, so you're at the Lagrange point between the Earth and the Moon, and you have to depart. So it's the first game is departure, and it's embarkation, you know, it's getting on course, and it's about no, actually, maybe you haven't even launched yet. Maybe it's about preparing your stores, giving the rundown of the ship and making and gathering resources from the Earth, making sure that your inventory is set up. And session one ends with the ship launching. Maybe.
I like that. What if the idea, like, you get a little, because I think it would be appropriate to give a little backstory, right? A couple pages that you read at the beginning that would say, here's what's happening. And the idea is, we know things are going bad on Earth. Like, I don't know, it's going to explode or something.
Yeah.
Volcanism, something. The Earth is going bad. So you're building this ship. And the time is coming, but the Earth is getting ready to blow up faster than you're ready for.
Hmm.
So that first game, you know you're going to make it. There's no chance of like, hey, we bought the game. We died in session one. No. But...
Well, you could do that, and you could make that, you know, you don't actually physically change anything about the game until you succeed at getting through session one.
That'd get frustrating, though.
Well, you know.
I was just thinking that you have to make some hard choices, right?
Yeah.
Like, right away. I think it's a terrible movie, but remember the movie 2012? Did you see that?
I don't think I ever saw that one.
It was terrible, but at the end, they're like rushing to get everything done, even though they've been planning for it because, you know, the government knew about the Mayan prophecy, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
So did John Cusack. Yeah, so you're trying...
Oh, yeah, that movie. I was thinking about the sequel to 2010. Yeah, okay. Yeah, you're right. Sorry. With the big ships.
Yeah, the
big ships. Yeah, right. Yeah. Oh, man, that was so dumb.
It was terrible.
Oh, it was terrible.
And it was basically like the focus of one family trying to get on.
Right.
Even though countless other people were falling off the boat and dying.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. We really cared about what happened to John Cusack.
I didn't.
No, I didn't either. We were supposed to, though. So, but what if it's that scenario, right?
Okay.
You control the specific families. And heck, why not have that be set, right? In the game, you control a couple families, right? Maybe you control it. Or maybe one big... Maybe it's not families. Maybe it's like teams.
What if it's like political parties?
Yeah, something like that. That would work, yeah.
Something maybe a little bigger than just a single family, you know?
Right, but that's what it was like. Maybe there's like groups that are selected, like your group, A, but sweeter names than that. You're like the Starfires, right? And there's like 1,000 people in your group or something like that. And you guys are the movers and the shakers. You're not just the schmucks that are on the ship because that's not fun.
Yeah.
But what I'm thinking is you have to rush off the Earth in that first one. So you know you're going to make it, but you're going to have to make some sacrifices. You're going to make some sacrifices early on without a lot of knowledge. Now, that may not mean you're crossing stuff off on the board right away, but I'm thinking if you've got things you're bringing with you, like resources, maybe like you have resource decks that you would bring with you. And in the beginning, you know, you get to take so many different decks, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to change the envelopes you're going to see.
Okay.
So what would be cool is later on, there may be chances in the game to, say, resupply. I don't know how, somehow. So those decks could come back into play, possibly, but possibly not.
Hmm.
Does that make sense?
Sure, I can see that.
So you're not actually on the Earth, though. You'd be mm-hmm. at, like, the Lagrange point. I agree. But they're trying to shuttle people to that, and you're trying to make sure the rest of the supplies are there.
Right.
You know, I like the idea that the mission starts at a deficit.
Uh-huh.
It's not like the players pick up and the mission's going fine and they just muck it
up. Yeah. I mean, I think you have to, part of the fun of this is that you have to see it from beginning to end.
Right.
Yeah. I want the ship to be called the SS Harry Seldon. Harry Seldon? Is that the guy's name?
Harry Sullivan?
Seldon? I think it's Seldon from Foundation.
Know.
The Foundation trilogy. Because it's... listeners, if you guys know Foundation, you know why I'm thinking of Foundation right now. Nobody I know cares. It's not a generational ship, but it's you know why I'm thinking about that, right?
I don't know.
Did
why.
I get that right, Harry Seldon? I could look it up, but that's not what we do here. Anyway, Jason, you should read the Foundation series because it's freaking awesome.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
I'm not going to do that, but thanks for the suggestion.
Okay.
I don't read a lot of books.
I know you don't.
Sometimes I do.
You suck at that.
I know.
Yeah. Okay. So the players, I'm hearing this is a competitive game, right?
Right.
We're working together to get to the end, but I think we each, if we keep it like a political thing, then we're kind of trying to achieve our own goals.
Well, I don't know that we want to polarize it and make it all about politics, because that's not going to be fun.
Well, no.
Unless you really like politics. And since it's about science fiction, mm-hmm. I would argue that politics are less exciting than science fiction than other things that could happen, like space battles.
See, maybe religious groups or maybe in each session these different factions have change. They evolve into different types of factions. They start as political parties and eventually turn into religions or something. Because I'm just thinking about that idea of, and this is a concept that we've talked about before that we think is really cool in relation to this generational ship thing, about a group of people who is on this ship. And they have forgotten where they came from. And as far as I know, this is life, and this is all that is.
Right.
And they don't. It doesn't make sense to them that at some point they will get to their destination.
Right.
You
right.
know.
Yeah. So, that's a funny thought.
You know, it's possible that at some point in this game, the you will open that mystery envelope, and it will say, "You are no longer trying to get to Earth 2."
Right.
You know, your goal now is not to get to Earth 2. Your goal is to wipe out all of that other faction because you hate them.
Right.
Because you don't share a common vision for the future of your people.
Right. It might be fun to have multiple factions, too, to where you're not always playing as this. I don't know, part of me says it'd be cool if you were playing as different factions sometimes. But then part of me says you might get kind of hooked on playing your faction. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because you can make decisions based on your faction. I mean, I don't know how many envelopes you're allowed to put in this thing, but one thing that might be cool is every session you say, based on what I'm good at, I want to try and do more for this session. And that's the envelope you open.
Oh, okay. So for game five, you have three different envelopes to choose from.
Well, I guess what you could even do is you could have like six envelopes. And so there's four. There's four factions.
Mm-hmm.
Each person gets to decide which goal. Like, I'm winning, so I'm gonna say I want to do this goal. So you take that envelope, and mm-hmm. it could be something really bad or it could be something good. You don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's interesting because at what point do they go from survivors to that is their mentality? I mean, it seems like it'd only be a couple generations.
It might not take long, especially if there's some kind of a technological malfunction with the education machines or something, you know.
That could be one of the problems. And like, you have to save either the education machines or something else that's super important.
Yeah, well, but I think to kind of steer the narrative, it might make sense for that to just happen. Like, too bad, you know, you guys forget. You've all forgotten, or the next generation will have no ability to learn anything about the generation, the home that they came from, the earth they came from, except from the word of mouth of their parents. Right. You know, there are all that the data has been lost. But then, just to, as you know, at the end of the game, when you get to the planet, or you know, alarms start going off from the bridge that nobody even knows what the bridge of the ship is for anymore. Alarms start going off, and the computer reawakens itself, and all of a sudden, people have access to all this database. Of stuff, and then it's about one faction of people realizes what the reality is, and they want to colonize the planet. And the other faction of people are saying, "What are you doing? This ship is the only home we've ever known. That's new and scary out there. And we don't have anything to do with
right.
it. You know, that could be a kind of a really cool, exciting climax for that.
It could be,
you know,
yeah. There's so many fun things that you could do with a game like this.
There's a good story in that. Yeah. You know,
feel good about that.
Yeah. That's exciting. Listeners, what do you guys think? Tell us your feelings, your opinions, your reactions. Do you think this stuff, do you think it has legs? Do you like, what other legacy games are out there that you've played? Because really the only one that I know that it is out there that people can play is Risk Legacy. So what else is there? What should I be looking into? What should we be looking into? But that's enough. We've spent enough time on that. We need to move on.
Yes, we do.
We need to move on to practicing the pitch.
Yeah.
It's your turn.
It's my turn. So I'm going to start out by telling a story. Please. I like doing that.
Yeah.
So this morning, I didn't have a game to pitch. We were talking this morning. I said, I don't know.
Slacker.
I don't even have an idea. Kind of snuck up on me. Normally recorded Tuesdays. It's Monday today. So
yeah.
I was like, oh, crap. What are we going to do? So I did my morning routine. My morning routine is that I pull up our website. I glance at our stats. I delete any spam we have. I approve any real comments we have. Mm-hmm. And I move on with my day at work. It's kind of like my morning ritual, though. I've done that ever since we started doing the podcast.
Yeah.
This morning I pulled it up, look at the spam folder, and one of the spam things, actually a few of them, were from this thing called Parajumpers. And I was like, Parajumpers?
Parajumpers.
I was like, what is... I don't even know why that would be a spam title, but whatever.
How is that different from a parachute guy?
I don't know.
Parachuter.
Parajumpers, though. Sounds like I'm jumping.
Skydiver. I'm thinking skydiver. It's just a skydiver.
Yeah, but parajumper, to me, sounded military-like. That's what I thought of when I heard that.
Paratrooper.
Yeah, paratrooper. Maybe paratroopers is a better term for this. But
yeah.
Anyways.
How about Koopa Troopers?
Okay, you're distracting.
I am.
Here. So, I read that, and I was kind of like, the first thing that popped in my mind
Koopa
was...
Koopa Jumpers. Okay, I'll shut up.
The first thing that popped in my mind was dexterity game. And I thought, I'm not really good at designing dexterity games. But, okay, we'll think about that. Dexterity game. And then throughout the day, I just kind of thought, and every once in a while, I just write a couple notes down. I came up with a full-fledged game, and I had so many notes just jotted down on my notepad that by the time I got home, before I came over, I made a prototype. It's only 27 cards.
Okay.
So here's the game, right? There's the attacker and there's the defender.
Okay.
Each of them is going to have 12 cards to use. And then there's three base cards, which represent the defender's bases. And those are laid out in the center of the table, equidistant apart from one another, 1, 2, 3, and a line.
Okay.
The idea of the paratroopers, we'll call them paratroopers, I like that better, their goal is to destroy the three bases. To do that, all you have to do is take a paratrooper and toss them so that they land on a base. If they do that and the base is unguarded, game over. Like, you win the game. Defender loses, attacker wins. Yay!
And they did all three bases.
Yep.
Okay.
One at a time. You can get rid of one at a time. Obviously, as you get rid of more and they're just down to one base, they can highly defend that because they're only focused on one base. Maybe that's their goal all along, is to just focus on one base. But what'll happen is you'll have three cards in your hand. You're going to throw one, draw one, back and forth. That's how the game is played. Now, I wanted to have a little bit of hand management, so I thought it would be cool if instead of just paratroopers, the attacker had a few different things at their disposal, right? So I was like, what else could you have? Well, maybe the attacker also has the ability to shoot missiles. Maybe they have bombs they can drop. Maybe they have radar. Maybe they have a helicopter, right? And I was just thinking about those things, and I'll be honest, I really didn't know where I was going with it. I just wrote it down, whatever. Then I thought, what about defenders? What will the defenders have? And I said, well, they have to have kind of a main thing they have the most of. That would be guards. So if there are guards at the base, which to put guards at the base, I would take a guard and toss it, and it has to land next to the base. Not on it, next to it. It could be touching it, but primarily next to it, right? If a paratrooper jumps in that, paratrooper is killed. Now, normally, when you lose one of your cards, you just discard it and you redraw it. But for the attacker, when he loses a paratrooper, he has four. It's out of the game forever.
Okay.
So once you throw a paratrooper down, they're just sitting there vulnerable, right? Even after they destroy the base, now they're just sitting there. And they could totally be taken out by whatever. Does that make sense?
Okay.
So the other the cards the defender has are drones, camouflage, a shield, guards, and anti-air rockets. So I ended up coming with kind of like a rock, paper, scissors mechanic. Not like actually rock, paper, scissors, but where drones will take out paratroopers, but missiles will blow up a drone. So like you toss the drone out next to a paratrooper mm-hmm. and it shoots them, right?
It has to be touching him or...
Next to him, right?
Okay. So what if it is touching him?
Yeah, sorry. It would have to be touching him. Yes. Okay. For that, you're right. But if I toss a missile out on that, then it blows up the drone, right? So the drones are staying out there. So maybe you've got the drones close to the your base. Because if I toss for the base and I miss and I hit the drone instead, I'm going to die. Mm. Does that make sense?
Sure.
So yeah, the game is super simple. You just go back and forth tossing things. Like the defender has a lot of things to protect him. Like he has a shield. I picture like a force field, right? And he tosses that on his base and now his base is invulnerable unless I throw a bomb on it. And then the bomb removes that. So bomb beats that. Most of the items are single use. When I play it, it's out. Like when I throw a bomb, it does its job. It either worked or it didn't based on where I threw it.
Okay.
And then it's out. It's in my discard pile until I shuffle them back in.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah. And there are things like, so like camouflage. Like if the guy throws camouflage out on his thing, you can toss radar on that. If you hit it with radar, boom, now you can see it again.
Okay.
And then helicopters are the last kind of piece there that are different. Helicopters can either be used to kill guards by tossing them on a guard, or if you toss them on a paratrooper, the paratrooper comes back to your hand. Does that make sense?
Okay.
So if you toss it on a paratrooper, you take both those cards back because you've rescued them. Because you have to have a way to get paratroopers back, in theory. Otherwise, you get four tries and you're out.
Yeah.
And I want there to be some interplay back and forth.
Hmm. So... Now, you said that... Okay, so the attacker wants to have a paratrooper on the base.
Yes.
But the defender doesn't want his stuff on the base.
Correct.
He wants his stuff around the base.
Well, some of the things, like the shield you want on top of the base, the camouflage you want on top of the base. And the idea is if a guard is touching your base, if you've got a guard touching your base and I toss my paratrooper and it hits that base, the guard kills him immediately. Does that make sense? Whereas on the cards, it would have to say, like, the drone should be placed.
Well, it seems like me as the defender, I would want to put a guard immediately directly on top of my base and like completely covering my base card.
If the guard was touching the base in any fashion and you threw a paratrooper on the base, paratrooper dies. Well, so you actually want to not completely cover it. You'd be better off giving yourself more real estate.
Well, but I'm saying that if I am the defender and I can put a guard on the base, completely covering the base, then the paratrooper has zero chance of actually destroying that base.
Until the guard is removed. That's correct.
So the defender wants to drop everything directly on top of the base. He wants to completely cover his base card. That's the way to win.
Yeah, that's one way to win.
Seems like that's the only way to win. Or, like, it seems like it's the easiest way to win.
Right. You want to try and defend your base while killing the paratroopers that are thrown. But see, if you completely cover all your bases, I'm never going to throw paratroopers down at them.
Yeah.
So you have to bait me as well, right? Leave a base open. So I might blow that base up, but you're going to take a paratrooper out in the process.
I don't care about baiting you. I just care about keeping you away from my bases.
Right. But the game would go on forever if you did that.
Hmm. Yeah, see, I'm not sure. I feel like that's, as the defender, and this is something that I struggled with Rocket Wreckers, this kind of asymmetrical nature.
Right,
here.
Yeah, because this is definitely asymmetrical gameplay.
Right, right. And this is something I haven't solved this problem with Rocket Wreckers yet, honestly. I haven't. The problem in Rocket Wreckers is what if, I only have four or eight cards total available to me. What if all eight cards are in play on the table and I don't want to discard any of those? And, you know, and so I don't have an answer for that yet. I mean, my first answer is if you're playing, if that's how you're playing, then you're doing it wrong, but that doesn't work.
Right.
And that's kind of, I mean, that's the argument that but, you, I mean, in this case too, then you're doing it wrong.
As we know from our good friend Cape Guy, there is a wrong way to play some games.
Yeah.
I mean, there is a way to win a game. We mean, you experienced that with Maelstrom in playtest. There were a couple of people that wanted to play the game as a different game.
Yeah. But I see, to me, I think that this design is encouraging me as the defender to play that way. To just pile up on top of it. And I don't, I mean, as long as I can keep the other guy away, that's all I care about. I don't care about winning. I just care about him not winning as the defender, right. You know?
I think that I would say this, like, for instance, your drones can't be placed directly on your base. In fact, I would say your drones can't even be touching your base, right?
Okay. Then what if I throw one out there and it does accidentally happen to land on my base?
Then it's out. It crashed.
Crashed.
Because, I mean, the dexterity has to mean something, right?
Yeah.
So, like, your guards can be touching your base or on your base. It doesn't effectively matter where they are unless you're precise enough that you could stack enough cards directly on top of each other that I couldn't get through them. But there's always a way for me to get through them because, say, you put camouflage, then a guard, then a shield, right?
Mm-hmm. Who goes first?
The defender always goes first.
Okay, so as a defender, I throw a guard out there on top of one base. Attacker now throws a paratrooper on base number two.
Yep.
Base number two is destroyed.
Yep.
Turn number three, I throw a guard on top of base number three. So now I've got guards on base one and base three.
Yep.
So it's assuming that the attacker draws a paratrooper at the start of the game, it's instantly a two base game, not a three base game.
Correct.
I think that takes a lot of strategy out of it. Then why not just have two bases to start with?
Because then you'd be down to one, possibly, at the end of your first turn.
And give the defender an automatic guard on each. If the first three or four turns are the same every time, then why have those in there?
Okay, I can see that. That's fair. So
that's a problem that I had with Maelstrom. If the first four rounds of the game are the same every time, why are we doing that?
Right, and that was the 1 week link with that game.
Right.
We'd play the first four rounds, we'd be like, all right, well, I'm going to do this. And even your playtesters were like, I guess I'll do that too, since everyone else is doing that.
Right. So yeah, so I'm just trying to apply some lessons that I've learned from others having similar scenarios. You know,
right.
Trying to apply some of those lessons to try and work through some of the challenges here.
I mean, I guess setup could be, I toss three guard cards out. If I get them on my bases, or touching my bases, they're protecting them.
Mm-hmm.
If not, they're open.
Mm-hmm.
And then attacker goes first. So, like, that's setup, and then attacker gets to go first.
Yeah,
that's fair. I can get on board with that.
Yeah.
Because in that scenario, yeah. That's fair. And that makes sense too, right? Because, it makes sense because that's realistic, like how the base would be
sure,
set up.
Sure, you'd have a chance to fortify your defenses no matter what. Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Well, in theory, yeah. People aren't coming up completely unguarded. I think I'll try it that way when we playtest it. Yeah. Why not?
Okay. No.
So the card breakdown is you have four guards and two of everything else.
Okay.
And you have four paratroopers and two of everything else. So,
and everything can be killed by something else?
Yes. And the top card would be active. So say you stacked, like, say you put camouflage on your base. Now I can't see it, right? And then on top of that, you put a shield. Well, how can I bomb it? Because I can't see it, right? So that creates an impossible situation. So it's got to be the top card is the one that's active. So if you put camouflage on your base and then cover it with a shield, I can target it with a bomb to blow up your shield. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So, okay. So you put camouflage on there. I drop radar on top of that. And then you focus on a different base on the next turn, say. Mm-hmm. And then I throw a paratrooper on top of my radar. And I win? I kill that base?
Well, your radar would go away immediately.
Oh, both of those cards would go away immediately.
Yeah.
The radar and the camouflage.
Yeah, if the card does not have a way that it... Because the cards will say kills or dies by. So if it says dies by, that means it's a permanent card that's there until mm-hmm. you get rid of it.
Okay.
If it doesn't say that, like Radar is just destroys this. Done. That's it. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Another concern that I have then is that if you're throwing cards out there and then immediately picking them up, that means you're going to be touching the cards that are already on the table and potentially moving them around a little bit. So changing that placement can mess with some of the dexterity, some of the randomness of throwing them out there.
I can see that. I'm not super concerned. I don't think that'll be as big of an issue as you think it could be.
Okay. I mean, you know, you get some meaty hands out there.
Ideally, there'll never be that many cards stacked in any one spot anyways. That's kind of the point. Okay. It's not like a maximum throwdown where you're piling cards on piling cards. It's mm-hmm. I pitched a couple cards out, and then they're probably gone after that, you know?
Okay.
So that's kind of it, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's got potential. I think in playtesting will reveal some more issues, I think.
It always does.
Okay. Well, then, hey, I think that's all we got for tonight, eh?
I think so.
Okay. Well, thanks, everybody, for listening to the show. We appreciate it. And thank you to Chevy for hanging out with us today to announce the winner of the Cardboard Arcade Contest. And congratulations to Drew for winning with that exciting game. I think I want to throw a couple shout-outs out there, a few plugs. Remember Something from Nothing, we mentioned earlier, our biweekly Google Hangout show where me and Jason and Chevy and TC talk about projects we're working on right now and talk about game design in general. Check that out. Follow us on Twitter to find out more about that. Next week is going to be our big, exciting year-end wrap-up show, 2013, a year in review for our show. It's kind of our second year-end thing where we're going to be looking back over where we've been over the past year and what we've accomplished and kind of where we missed out on a few things. And I don't know, we'll just see how that goes. So stay tuned for that. Reminder that you can get your own copy of the Rumpelbum Academy for Bug-Based Baking at the Great Game Crafter right now. It's only $10.99. It's pretty exciting, guys. For those of you who have picked up a copy for your very own, I really, really appreciate that. Thank you very, very much. And any other plugs?
I think we did it.
Okay. So, if you want to get in touch with us, and we encourage that as always, you can send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at podcastbtg. Jason is at J.A. Slingerland, and I am at poorly_design. You can like us on Facebook. You can leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. Oh, hey, if you've bought a copy of Rumpelbum, you could also leave me a review on the GameCrafter page. I need more of those reviews, please. So that'd be awesome. You can come on back every week and hang out with us some more. And if we don't see you before then, have a good new year. But you're going to listen to us again, aren't you?
Hope you're going to listen to the year-end
show. I hope so. Don't miss it. But if you're traveling, you might not get us in time. Anyway, I'm rambling. I'm having trouble with words tonight.
I know. Good night.
Good night. Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game.
Hello.
Chevy died.
What's happening?
How you doing?
I feel like I just talked to you.
Yeah, you did. Yesterday.
That's right. That's right.
You didn't talk to me, though.
Yeah. I did not talk to you because you were absent for some reason.
Yeah, I was elbow deep in gunk out of my drains because I was replumbing half the house yesterday.
That sounds appetizing.
Oh, it was delicious, especially when it splattered into my mouth.
Oh, that's terrible.
That is horrid.
Yeah, it was.
Ah.
It's still basically all I can smell.
Yeah, that's understandable.
I hope the house doesn't actually smell like it right now.
I couldn't smell it when I came in.
Okay, good.
In fact, it actually smelled like maybe you were overcompensating because it smelled like candles and stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why.
That's
you guys
probably
are trying
it.
To hide the smell.
I am anyway. I'm revolted by it.
Spray those things right up your nostrils.
Oh, that's it. Kill some brain cells.
Yeah.